Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Survivors to Survivors. This is Dr. Katarina Rosenblatt, and I am a survivor of human trafficking and domestic violence. And excuse me, today we will be talking about mental health. And I'd like to welcome our executive director of There's Hope for Me, Diana Lubiao, to the discussion.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you, Diana, for joining us this morning. I know mental health is something that's near and dear to your heart. Would you like to share a little bit about your interest in that area and what drew you to this field?
Yeah, so my own personal experience is what drew me to this, because I saw how difficult it was for people to discuss and how detrimental it was to a person's well-being, that I wanted to make a difference and help kids not have to go through that. So that's kind of what sparked my interest for that. And also I'm getting a bachelor's in psychology, so that kind of helps too. But something that people don't realize is, you know, mental health is not just within adolescents, but a lot of adults, most of adults deal with it. They have either too much stress at work, or they have some trauma stuff that they never dealt with when they were younger. It just keeps up recurring in their head, and they don't talk about it because mental health, let's face it, is looked down upon. If it's not a physical disability and you can see it, then it's not taken as seriously as it should be. And mental health is definitely the silent killer.
Wow, that is such a great point, Diana. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And what do you think about, you know, the cuts that have been talked about in legislation, you know, nationwide, as far as cutting necessary mental health services for survivors and people struggling with the silent killer, as you put it?
I totally disagree with it. And I actually wrote an article for a local college's newspaper entitled America's Mental Problem, and that's exactly what it is. I don't think that because this is something that you can't see, that you should cut the resources in order to get it. And I found statistics in Florida that most of the patients and, you know, those who suffer with severe mental health disorders are those in the working class in their 40s and 50s that are CEOs, that are working professionals, that they suffer from severe. That was about 66% of the population here. And the other, and 20% was, you know, those in poverty. So the government is looking at those in poverty as the reason why it's okay to cut this, because they feel, okay, well, they can't afford insurance anyway, so let's just take some federal bucks. No, it's your neighbor, it's your friend, it's your coworker that's the one that's struggling with depression, that's the one that's going home and contemplating whether they should make it tomorrow or not. It's not just the person on the corner asking for money. A lot of times those people, they, you know, they're fine. They're just choosing to be that way. But what people don't see is mental health is not a choice. You can't choose to have it or not. Mm-hmm. And I totally disagree with the whole budget cut, and I think it's ridiculous, honestly.
So when you did your analysis in Florida, what was the age range that you found for the highest rate of suicide? I think that was important.
Yeah, so for the highest rate of suicide, it was actually adults from 45 to 600 or so suicides in Florida in 2015. And that kind of rattled my mind, because even me, a survivor of mental health, I kind of stereotyped, you know, suicide is just amongst teenagers or college age students, but it wasn't. And that was something that really opened my eyes, because that's people that are my parents' age, that's people that are my professor's age. So, you know, and it's crazy to think that it's like the battle's not over yet just because of their age. and you know, even adolescents and young adults, they didn't even come in until like fifth or sixth place for that, for the statistics. It just the age kept going up, and then it dropped down to about mid-30s at four. But you know, it's something that needs to be discussed more.
Okay, so with that said, let's bring that to survivors of trafficking. In terms of mental health, what do you think, how do you think that affects like older survivors? You know, a lot of people are just coming out of realizing that they were a victim of trafficking. Do you think that had to do with because there were no services when they were younger and are now just identifying and realizing, oh, that's why I suffer with this or struggle with this or what have you?
I feel like there were services when they were younger. I just feel like they weren't as resourceful and helpful. But also when you're in that, you're kind of disassociated from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come out of it, you kind of disassociate yourself from the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of survivors who have come out of it, it's hard for them to look at the reality of, okay, this is what really happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to deal with it now? How am I going to get back from it? A lot of survivors that I've come to know and that I've heard about suffer, most of them, all of them suffer with PTSD, but some of them struggle with DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, which is understandable because you're disassociating yourself from reality. You're not being in touch with reality. You're creating these alter personas to cope with what was reality. So I think that they just never had the resources to reach out to it, especially if this happened while they were younger. They weren't going to be able to have the opportunity to go to those resources. And there's no doubt that their trafficker, whoever it was that they were working under, was going to let them. And they weren't in the right state of mind either to get the help at that time because they weren't realizing what was going on.
You know, I'm glad that you brought up the DID issue because that is something that I think is a big controversy right now for survivors and just for the mental health field. You know, some people want to insist on integration for the sufferer of DID. What's your thought on that?
I feel that it's important for counselors to speak to each identity that this person has, get to know the characteristics of each one of them, but not so much encourage all of them.
Mm.
You know, because these different personas are created by this one person, so that means that this one person has all these different characteristics inside of them. And I think integration can be a good thing when you're ready for it. But I think what's important is to know how to control and maintain your baseline with all your different personalities that you may carry.
And it's really up to the survivor, right? On when they're ready and if they're ready.
Oh, yeah. Most of everything is up to a person. And especially with somebody with DID who has been a survivor, who has been forced to do so many things, you cannot force them to change. And this is what's helping them get through life. You have to let them until they're ready to actually make a change. Because right now, that's what is helping them go through life.
Okay, so I'm going to read something, and thank you for that analysis, Diana, on DID with survivors of trafficking. I do think it's important to give the voice to the survivor. And again, to our listeners, if you're listening and you'd like to call in, just press 5 on your phone and remember not to use your speakerphone, and we'd love to hear from you. So this is a term, I don't know if you've heard of it, Diana, it's called poly-victimization, and I'm taking this from the OVC TTAC website on mental health. And it says polyvictimization, also known as complex trauma, describes the experience of multiple victimizations of different types, such as sexual abuse, physical abuse, bullying, exposure to family violence, and more. This definition emphasizes different kinds of victimization rather than just multiple episodes of the same kind of victimization, because it signals a generalized vulnerability research shows that the impact of poly victimization is much more powerful than even multiple events of a single type of victimization. What are your thoughts about that? So basically, it's saying poly victimization is a trauma, obviously trauma that any survivor can experience, but it's saying that these layers of trauma can be more harmful than, say, one consistent act of or a certain type of trauma. And I think a lot of survivors of human trafficking deal with poly victimization. You know, I'm sure you can relate to that, having been around the survivor community for a while, you know, and survivor leadership community with me. Would you agree with that statement, that term poly victimization? And that came from the National Children's Advocacy Center. It's on the OVC website.
You know, I do agree with this, because I do feel like there are different layers of victimization. And if you actually think about it, you're not just re-victimizing or reliving one certain event. When you think about something bad that's happened to you, you think about from all the different point of views, from the actual situation to how you felt, to how the other person might have felt, to what was going on that day, to how it looked. Mm-hmm. And you're just seeing and remembering all these different things, and it's much more complex than just one simple event taking place. So I do believe that poly victimization is real, and it's, you know, that's an accurate definition for it.
And it says it signals a generalized vulnerability. I'd love to hear from you, our callers who are listening, if you have any experience that you feel like could add to the conversation, please join in, press 5, and remember to take your phone off speaker. But we're talking today with Diana Liao, the executive director of There's Hope for Me, and we're talking about mental health and its effects on human trafficking survivors. So one of the other things that I would say regarding mental health, again, this is taken from the OVC, because I think OVC pretty much has their stuff together when they do the research. They talk about some of the commonly reported barriers and challenges to helping victims with trauma. And so I would love to hear how others feel about this, but I know as a survivor myself, I can agree with a lot of this. They're saying there's limited availability and access to appropriate mental health services, difficulty establishing trusting relationships with survivors, mandated. I don't agree with necessarily with that part. I think it's difficulty establishing trusting relationships with non-survivors. I think being able to connect with your survivor sisters is a lot easier than being able to connect with people that have not experienced any kind of trauma. Would you agree with that, Diana?
Yeah, I think with anybody, especially those who have that, you know, tragedy in common of trafficking, it's so much easier to talk to them, because you feel like you have something you can connect with. You guys have something mm-hmm. in common. Mm-hmm. There's a wall that's broken down, and it's just easier to relate to each other, you know.
Exactly. One of the things that they say here is victims may not define their experience as abusive or attempt to escape. I think that's probably early on in some trauma relationships, trauma bonding situations, you know, like the traffickers. They have that trauma bond, and I can understand that in domestic violence. But I do think, as far as wanting to leave, we all have experienced a time when we wanted to get out of this situation and wanted to leave that negative environment, but just didn't know there was something better out there. I don't know for you listeners out there if you feel the same, but I know once I found that there was freedom available, I wanted that. I definitely did. I knew that something in these situations, you know, and I've had more than one, it was just not healthy. But for some reason, because I guess like it said here on OVC, my vulnerability, I kept falling into those. But let's talk about some of those you know, and that makes us vulnerable to being re-trafficked or re-traumatized or getting into domestic violence situations or sexual assault. And so I think the survivor community, it's very important for us to connect with other survivors where we do find that healing place that we can be ourselves and heal. Relationships heal. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, totally.
So whatever relationship is going to help make you whole and feel safe, I believe is going to be something that's helpful. I know for me, I once dated a blind psychologist, and he told me the fact that he was blind didn't matter, but the fact that he was a psychologist and did that while being blind, I had respect for him. And he told me, you know, relationships are what heal you. So relationships, you know, of course, we believe, you know, that there's a faith component and you have to take that step on your own to go and seek that help or seek that relationship. But I do think that when you feel at peace with someone and trust and you can connect with them at a deep level, you're able to heal yourself in that process, in that relationship, right? A lot of times that comes through a counselor, but a lot of times that can just come through peer support and through survivors helping survivors. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm going back to the other question, talking to somebody that has a similar background, it helps to see how they got through it and what they're mm-hmm. doing now, even though they, you know, they might not be at 100% gone through it, but they're there enough to talk to you about it.
Right.
So I think people always learn from each other and we can mm-hmm. always grow and find out something new about ourselves or about just anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we talk to somebody, and especially when we talk to somebody who has a similar background as us, I think that that does really help mend the brokenness mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of, also with mental health, a lot of treatments are talk therapy.
Mm.
And it just, and I bring that up because it's so important just to talk. Communication is so important with yourself, with somebody else,
mm-hmm.
you know, but talking about what you're feeling, why you're feeling like this, how can it change, and how you got there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very helpful. And, so a lot of the treatments for these severe mental health disorders are talk therapy because you do talk through it and you find the origin of this. So it's always good to vent how you're feeling. And I would definitely encourage that.
What are some of the therapies, other therapies that maybe you guys out there who are listening have heard of? I know for me, what was helpful was EMDR, you know, which is the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So that's what EMDR stands for, but it's really just using your sensory motors, you know, like your eye hand coordination, and it helps bring you back to a place where you can focus on the trauma early on. I know that was very helpful. I also tried the you know, as a survivor of human trafficking, I also get asked a lot of times to try different therapies. So I feel like I'm the guinea pig sometimes mm-hmm. in my community, which is fine. If it helps, you know, I'll promote it. Just like I said, EMDR is great. I think talk therapy is great. If you can find a therapist that you can trust, again, that's that safe relationship. The other thing that I found that worked, which was not talk therapy, was the brain sensors, you know, they attach these sensors to your brain, and I think it's good for survivors that do not have that desire to retell their story, and that's fine too, but it's like a rewiring of your brain. And so with that, I don't want to freak anybody out, but you know, they do take you through like a quiet room for like 2 hours, and you listen to this music, and it's the tones in the music and the brain waves that get rewired. So I know for me, when I tried that one, it was an interesting first initial process, and it was brainwave therapy. With that, it caused me to overcome fear. So that was a big barrier that talk therapy did not help me with. The EMDR helped me deal with trauma from the past, but fear, like a constant living in fear, I had to go through the brainwave therapy. So here's a list of some symptoms reported by trafficking survivors. Again, back to the OVC website, they talk about depression, hopelessness, feelings of sadness and unhappiness, sudden or inexplicable crying, loss of interest in things and or ability to plan for the future, stress-related disorders, avoidance, disorientation, confusion, anxiety, phobias, and panic attacks. I can relate to the phobias. Again, that was that fear component that I felt. Even some of the, you know, we're here in Orlando where there was the Pulse shooting, and they had a memorial this week on Monday, on the 12th. It was a 1 year, and they did this amazing story by a survivor of the shooting that lived through it. And she talked about that she still has fear that somebody's out to get her. Somebody's trying to get her. Even though it was a 1 day experience, that type of trauma and tragic event can stay with you for even a year after. You know, when this came out in the Orlando Weekly, where we are, I saw that, and I really appreciated her opening up and sharing about that. And I think it's important to understand and embrace your trauma and be okay with, you know, the phobias and the fears and the depression that may have come as a result of it. It's not a negative that you're dealing with it. It's positive to embrace it, recognize it, and then deal with it. Wouldn't you agree, Diana?
Oh, totally. With any trauma, I think you heal quicker and accept it more when you see it for what it was, learn how to deal with it, and move on. Especially with something such as the Pulse shooting, you know, that's big. And I bring that up because it's just 2 days after the year anniversary. And, you know, all the love and support that we got in as a city was amazing. But something so tragic as that, you know, you think, how can you move past that?
Right.
Or trafficking, how can you move past that? You bite the bullet. You see what happened. You accept it. And then you say, okay, where do I go? What can I do now?
Good point. You bite the bullet. So I think that biting of the bullet, though, as a survivor, has to come at a time when you're ready.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Anything, though. Anything.
Yeah. Because one of the things also they talk about here in OVC is denial, memory loss, difficulty concentrating. You know, if you're living in denial, you get out of it. Okay, I remember, you know, just fresh out. I'm trying to better my life, not trying to live in tragedy and trauma. But I do think that some people get stuck. Have you ever met a survivor who has gotten stuck?
Yeah.
And what did that look like? How old was that person? Tell me about your experience as someone who has experienced other trauma, but not trafficking. But you saw that person stuck. How old were they?
Well, I've met a few different people that were 30s, 40s, 20s. And they were stuck because they never dealt with what happened. And a lot of times when trauma happens at a young age or at any age, honestly, you sometimes stay stuck at that age.
Mm.
So you see a lot of pregnant teens or, you know, men who have had some kind of trauma in their adolescent life, they stay stuck there because their mind is just, you know, they don't wanna face reality. And so I think with survivors who do that, it's ultimately to their detriment because they're not processing it correctly. They're not processing it in the way they should, even though, yes, it's on their time. But it's harder to talk to somebody and to relate to somebody who is still stuck in that mentality. And I hope I'm being sensitive to this.
Mm-hmm.
but I'm just trying to speak, you know, the truth about it. And I think that it's a lot harder to have a conversation with somebody who's stuck there just because it's almost like they're a ticking time bomb. It's, you know, not that it's a bad thing, it's just they haven't been ready to do it. But if it's been 5, 10, 20 years since the light,
mm-hmm.
and they're still there, yeah, maybe it'll be a good time to try to help yourself. But, you know, other than that, it's just, it's hard because you don't know what it is that, what you could say that might affect them the wrong way, or, you know, their trauma might come out at an inappropriate time, and it's just because it's not that it's their fault, they just didn't know. They just don't know how to relate to other people.
Okay, so I'm going to advocate here on the side of survivors, right? Because I've been there, obviously, I'm your mom, and you know that I've gone through a lot of that stuff, you know, trauma and trafficking. And I've also been stuck in different phases. So what would you say to somebody who's like, you know what, I'm just not ready. I'm just not ready. I'm happy being stuck here. It's not that you're happy. I think it's that you're safe and you're comfortable. You can only go so far that your mind lets you go, you know? I know, for example, I was stuck at 17, I think, for a long time. And it wasn't until I was at a safe place in my life, after I got divorced, you know, from your dad, and we went through that whole process, and I know that was traumatic for you as well, but I think after I got to, like, a safe, stable place, I was able to, you know, work on myself. What do you say to the survivors that constantly live in chaos and never allow themselves to have that peace? Do you think maybe that's part of the hindering process for their healing?
Yes, I do think it's hindering to them because they don't want to deal with it. And you can't overcome something without accepting what that something was. Mm-hmm. So, like I said before, it's only to their detriment. And yeah, I know, you know, you were like that for a time, and it was hard to talk to you without hearing something about the divorce or hearing something about trafficking or, you know, nonprofit work. It was really hard. But I wasn't going to force you to do something you weren't ready to do if you weren't ready to deal with it and move on, just like we shouldn't to anybody.
Right.
But it's good to know that it's only to your detriment if you don't.
So you're an advocate for seeking mental health.
I'm a strong advocate for that. There's nothing but positivity that can come out of that.
Right.
Whether you like your therapist or not, you're still being able to get something out off your chest mm-hmm. and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also finding the right therapist that is trauma-informed.
Oh, definitely. I had to go through, I think, 7 different therapists maybe 7 different psychiatrists and about 4 different therapists. So I finally found the right one. And now that I have, it's great, you know?
And how about the survivors that you work with, the male survivors? How resistant are they to finding and getting treatment? Is it different than female?
I think it's different, but it's kind of the same. But the reasons why it's different is because males don't want to feel like they were violated mm-hmm. sexually mm-hmm. by another man.
That's true.
You know, that makes them feel like less of a man, and they're not. It's just what happened to them, and it's a sad truth, but they're not. That doesn't make them less of a man, and it doesn't make them less of a man if they do seek out mental health help, and if they are battling with something that has to do with mental health, it doesn't make them less of a man. So I think the reasons that it's different than females is because of that. It's because of the social status that men are supposed to have in society opposed to women, because, you know, and we're just going to be real here, but for you hear more about women getting raped than you do men. And it's almost, not that it's good, but it's almost socially acceptable for women to get raped. and not a man. When you hear about a man getting raped, you think, did he want it though? Did he really get raped? How can a guy get raped? You can't make him, you know, have an erection without his willingness. And those are all lies. It's not good for either sex. And that's the thing that I feel like now in our times, as a millennial, and the millennials who are coming and making a difference and everything, you see all these changes. And in the Latin culture, it's gender oriented, the words. So now they've come up with a thing called Latinx, where it's not either or. And I think it's good in a sense because men and women should be equal.
Right.
Men and women should be equal. No doubt about it. There are things that people, not men or women, but people are better at than other people. That's just because they're physically able to do that, mentally able to do that, emotionally, but that doesn't mean because they're a man, they're stronger at this. Because they're a man, they're better. Because they're a woman, she's smarter. There's so many smart men out there. There's so many strong women out there. So I think that social and society does play a huge part in why men don't go and seek women to help. And that's why also in marriages, you don't see the man always like, yes, let's go to marriage counseling and try to fix our relationship. You see the woman, when it should be both of them. There's a thing called love versus in love. When you're in love, it's selfless, it's doubtless. You want to work together. You don't keep a scorecard. You want to fix things.
Right.
So, and I hate when men are like, oh, it's only because she's so emotional. No, it's not. Yeah, women are more detail oriented. We do. You know, that's just how that's how we are made up. We pay attention more to detail. We like the fluff. Men, just to the point, that's it. But that's why it's more important for them to be able to feel like they can break out and go talk to somebody about what's going on, because a lot of them will just hide it and cover it up and you know, dump anger on it. That's why you see a lot of men who are hotheads. It's not because they're bad people, but it's because they've dealt with so much trauma in their life that they haven't figured it out. They haven't learned how to fix it. And they get angry at themselves. They get angry at the world. They get angry at the person who hurt them. And just all this anger is just built up and built up and built up. All these layers. Like when we were talking about the layers of victimization, it's the same thing. The layers of trauma, they're layered with anger.
And also, men are supposed to be the providers. So getting therapy or feeling like they can't, you know, provide for their family, their mom or what have you, if it's a male survivor that I know you've worked with, do you think they're going to be open to looking at their vulnerabilities and their victimization? Do they want to see themselves as a victim?
No. Nobody wants to see themselves as a victim.
Right.
You know, and I don't think anybody should. I mean, it's hard to see, wow, okay, I got raped. It's hard to say that, you know, for any survivor of trafficking or any survivor of rape. You don't want to see, and especially if you're a person who's an alpha, quote unquote, you don't want to see a time where you were vulnerable. It just makes the hairs on your back stand up and it makes you cringe. But that's the hard thing that you have to do. You have to go through that. You have to realize what was so you can get the help so you can become to where what is. This is what I'm doing now.
Excellent. Excellent point. Well, thank you, Diana, so much for joining us. And for callers that are or listeners that are on air, please feel free to call in and join the conversation. We are at 701-719-5509, and you can dial 5 to join in the conversation. And we're going to take a brief 5-minute break, very brief, to turn over into our next session. So please enjoy your listening. Okay, we're back. Thank you so much for listening as we had that insightful conversation with Diana Juliao, Executive Director of There's Hope For Me. And Diana's focus, as you heard, is on mental health and working with male survivors of human trafficking. I think Diana gave some very insightful points in working with survivors and understanding where they are. As a survivor and as her mom, of course, I have my own opinion as far as, you know, taking your time, because it did take me quite a while to get ready to deal with things. And I truly believe that God gives us the right time, the right person, the right place to deal with things. But I agree with Diana in the point that, you know, well, first let me say this verse, that God will not give us more than we can bear. And for sure, I could not deal with therapy while trying to survive a lot of stuff. But when it was time, I do think that made a huge difference in my life. I think that what Diana said is that we do have to take responsibility for our lives at some point. And so seeking out that mental health assistance is part of that. Any kind of help, any kind of health. You know, so mental is just one form of our bodies and our being is our health, mental health, physical health, spiritual health. Today we're talking about mental health. And so some of the symptoms I'm going to read off to you guys that are, again, reported by trafficking survivors based on OVC is exhaustion. And please feel free to chime in if you can relate. Exhaustion and constant fatigue, isolating behavior, guilt, shame, or self-blame. Memory loss, anger, aggression, which Diana talked about, irritability, mood changes, changes in appetite or eating patterns. I think it would be helpful to have mental health professionals gain some training in this area so that they can learn how to relate to survivors of human trafficking and not push people beyond what they can do. I was very fortunate to have therapists who were very understanding throughout my process. Sometimes we could only deal with certain things, you know, the divorce. Sometimes we could deal with, you know, church hurts. Sometimes we could deal with the trafficking. So, you know, it's your call as a survivor. That's how I feel. It's your call when you're ready and when the time is right. Some of the other things you might experience, and this is just to let you know, you're not alone. You know, this program is from survivors to survivors. So you're not alone in these symptoms, but one of the symptoms says fear of being alone, distrust and fear of strangers, recurrent or intrusive memories of abuse, feeling inferior to others. I wonder if anyone's ever felt that. Feeling or being permanently damaged, fear of rejection. Sexual problems, including lack of sexual desire or over-sexualized behaviors, obsessions and compulsions, hallucinations or delusions, somatizations, psychosomatic symptoms, self-harm and suicidal ideation, trauma bonds and attachment issues, Stockholm Syndrome. I think we all know what that is. We can relate. And if you don't know what that is, it's when you're bonded to the person who is abusing you, your abuser, just because they've given you some form of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, food, clothing, a place to stay. You think this person is safe and you can trust them? Well, they're not. They're not necessarily safe, but you feel a bond with them. So that's something that you need to work through in understanding what is love, what is real, and what worth you have and deserve in being treated the right way. You know, just because someone offers you something nice or something that you need doesn't mean you owe that person anything. Definitely not your loyalty. And lastly, they talk about numbness. So I do think OVC has some good points here. They talk about establishing physical and psychological safety is a prerequisite in working with trafficking victims with trauma history. And it requires working collaboratively with those involved with the case to assess current client safety needs and multiple needs. So I know when we've done our work with There's Hope for Me, we always try to assess the situation. Is the survivor away from the trafficker, and do as much as we can to help them get out of that. But what are some of the other mental health issues that survivors might be dealing with? I think we've touched on DID. We've touched on trauma bonding. Some traffickers have a complex emotional relationship with their victims. So while they're being victimized, you know, they're victims. So that non-identification as a victim, I think, is a tough one to break through. You know, denial, self-blame, and that can lead to self-harm and, you know, promiscuous behavior even after getting out of trafficking. I think it's important to work with the person, not just the trauma. You know, build up the person's identity in who they are, because a lot of times as survivors, we don't know who we are when we come out of these situations. We are who this person has told us we are, and we just focus on that until we've been granted freedom to understand that we're more than the voice of this abuser. And we're more than what they've told us in those lies. So if any of you out there have ever experienced any of this and you want to, you know, bring your voice to the table, this is the time for that to be heard. And we would love to hear from you. Again, remember to press 5 so that we can put you on air. We only have about 10 or 15 more minutes left on our show. But Diana, is there any other last words that you wanted to share regarding what type of mental health issues survivors might be dealing with, as far as bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia? I know those are all issues that have been dealt with.
I would say body dysmorphia, eating disorders, obsessive compulsive disorder, because they feel like they couldn't control anything else that happened in their life, so now they can control something. And also probably borderline personality disorder, which is different than multiple personality disorder.
And different than DID, right?
Yeah, DID is multiple personality disorder. So borderline is just, you have mood swings. And I think that those are, you know, the main ones that survivors of trafficking might suffer.
Right. And
insomnia too.
Right, of course, insomnia. We have a caller that's going to be joining us, so let's add them to our list. Welcome. Thank you for joining the call. Who do we have here?
Lucy Bloom joined. I've been listening in.
Hello, Lucy, and welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having this open. I'm not quite sure how it works. There's a big echo.
Yeah, you just talk into your phone. You want to make sure your speaker is off, but we can hear you fine. So go ahead, girl. The floor is yours. If you want to introduce yourself or talk about your background.
Okay, so I am president of an organization that provides mentoring and advocacy services for women. And then we also have a nationwide referral network. And provide community education and come to bringing leaders together on how to move forward efforts for housing and job building, wealth growth, that type of thing. So,
my question is about
the chaos that many survivors just continue to live in and seem to not be able to get out of. And then I also appreciated what you were saying about the different disorders. Like some of the, one of the gals specifically I'm working with, she is indeed hearing voices, seeing people, but her psychiatrist has told her it's not schizophrenia, it's borderline personality disorder. And I think for her, what I've been encouraging her, as long as she gets medication and care that she feels comfortable with, you know, to not worry so much about what the diagnosis is. But I did think that was really curious that they made that swing to, it's not schizophrenia, it's borderline personality disorder. And so she's trying to educate herself and her family about what that is and how to be a good support to her.
Okay, I think that's a great point. And first, let me just say thank you, Lucy, for joining us. Is it okay to share your role in the survivor movement?
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah.
Okay. So Lucy is an up-and-coming survivor leader. And up-and-coming meaning, I know you've just joined the movement recently, but you've been a leader in, I think it was government agencies, right, for a while? And now
yes,
you've joined
the
movement in the nonprofit world.
Yeah, I was director of Faith-Based Community Initiatives for the Kansas Department for Children and Families. I was there for 5 years. And human trafficking was one of our initiatives. And that's where I really developed the skills and the passion for bringing multi-spirits together and how to address some of these larger issues.
Right. Well, welcome for joining our call and our program, Survivors to Survivors. You're definitely the kind of person that we love to have on air and also listening. You know, this is open to anyone, but especially survivors, because that's my heart, you know, as the founder of There's Hope for Me, is just to give a voice and a platform for other survivors to air their concerns. So thank you for joining us on that point. And then also for joining the movement and for bringing your voice to this platform. I think your insight in helping this young woman is probably going to, and especially given your background with government agencies, is going to be more helpful than probably some of the people she's dealing with. I think it can sometimes be a tragedy to hear that mental health providers just want to label people with a certain diagnosis and not give them hope. You know what I mean? I feel like with this young lady that you're talking to, sometimes they may feel like that's it. The sentence has been issued and there's nowhere else they can go from there. But is she embracing her her therapy? Where is she at in the process?
In terms of like a weekly therapy, she's waiting to get into their DBT program. And so right now she's just meeting the psychiatrist once a month. And it's a real short, like 15-minute appointment for medication. And then she has family members who are helping her be able to pay the fees for her prescriptions.
Okay. So talk a little bit more about what is your concern in regards to her well-being and how can she be helped?
That's a good question. That's kind of, in terms of my concerns for her well-being, I would like to see her be able to have quicker access to the actual therapy. So something I've, been asking her is, how can she better advocate for herself in terms of getting that, because she's been on this waiting list for a couple of months. And that when I've called the mental health center myself and asked them, how do they typically put people into their flow? And they themselves said they would not want it to take that long. So here's somebody who's seeking care, wants care so that she can get stable, because she wants to get a job. She wants to live independently, but she can't access the professional care that's
okay,
provided
so that
through the
makes
county.
Sense.
But she's also uninsured. I mean, there's several, there's several dynamics here. And she's, mm-hmm. she has not lived, after she moved out of the home, she went to a junior college, and now she's just kind of bounced from friend's house. She hasn't yet, mm-hmm. she's had one time where she had a stable job, but it lasted 5 months. She still has these barriers she's trying to push through, and this access to mental health has been one of her primary goals that she has set for herself.
Right. So are you mentoring her through that process?
Yes, but maybe not very well. So we stay.
Well, don't discount your involvement.
So we
your
stay
role
in
is going
to
be
continual
crucial.
Contact. And then I just continue to ask her what resource does she have within herself to be able to move this forward so that her goal keeps moving forward. So I just keep kind of nudging her, keep looking within, don't get, because I don't want her to give up. But I don't want to turn around and just do it for her. Like, I'll do it with her, but I don't want to do it for her, because I don't want her to get into that pattern of feeling disempowered to be able to make change on her own.
Such a good point. And, as we talked about earlier with Diana, I think it is important to let the survivor own their journey, right? Because when we are, as ourselves, you and I both know that as survivors, we had to get to a place where we were ready to get help. Okay, so she's ready to get the help that she needs. And I think for her, it was important to be able to reach out for that help, get the guidance. And now that she's gotten the guidance, she's got to do her part in getting, the rest of the way. But you holding her hand through it, just encouraging her not to give up, that there's hope, and showing her by your example in your life, that you've become a stable person, I think is going to be really helpful. So don't get discouraged through the process is my encouragement to you.
Yeah. Thank you. And she's very easy to work with, because she's appreciative. So she doesn't some guys I work with, I start to nudge them and they kind of back off. And so I'm like, okay, let's find another approach. But she's just the opposite. She really appreciates it. To the extent that I know her, I've met her parents, I've met her grandparents, I've met her cousins. So I'm one of the family now. So I think that's impressive too. Indicating again that she does really want help.
Definitely. That's an important point. Like Diana said earlier, she's ready to get the help that she needs. And just being with her through that process is so important. So I want to applaud you, Lucy, for sticking it out and just being available to her as she finds her own journey in this healing process.
Thank you for that.
Oh, it's a process. Like we always say as survivors, you know, you take two steps forward. Sometimes you take one step back, but you don't give up. And by your example of consistently loving her and being there, she's going to see that there's hope for her too. So
right.
I think that's about, you know, all we can do sometimes with survivors is just help them to see that there's hope and then guide them towards what hopeful and helpful resources are out there. But, you know, you can lead a horse to water. You can't make them drink it. And I don't think that healing is ever going to be a one-time deal, as I'm sure you can relate. Healing is a lifelong process for survivors of trafficking and any kind of trauma, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
anyway.
Sure.
Yeah, but keep it up because you're doing good work, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you so much for joining us today. I think we've reached our 1 hour mark, but it was a privilege and a pleasure to hear from you, Lucy, and to have everyone listening to Survivors to Survivors. I'm going to just close this out. Lucy, if you want to hang on a second. I don't know if you are a praying person, but I always like to end in prayer if you're interested in joining me in that. Okay. Well, today's verse is Matthew 5:14, and it says, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid." So let that be your encouragement today, Lucy, as you go out and let your voice be heard as it was today. Thank you for bringing your voice to our program. And we just want to lift you up to God and all of the survivors that you work with. So, dear Heavenly Father, Lord Jesus, I want to thank you first and foremost for your Son, Jesus, that died for us, that gave us hope, that gave us new life. And I thank you for my sister who joined us today. Thank you for Lucy Bloom, who has become an advocate for other survivors. I pray, God, that she will not lose heart or grow weary in well-doing, because I know this work can sometimes be daunting and take a lot of energy to see it to completion. But I pray that she rests on you as she does this important work, especially with this young survivor she's working with now, or a new survivor. And I pray for all of her work to continue to bear fruit, even in the smallest details, just bringing hope to others, that if there was hope for her, there's hope for them. Mm-hmm. And so bless all of our listeners and our world today, that we will all continue to grow in love and unity and peace to bring comfort. And it's in your name, Jesus, we pray. Thank you. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. And
yes,
God bless
you. Thank
you
for putting this together. It's been really good to listen to.
Wonderful. We appreciate you. And feel free to call in every time. Anytime. We have our show every other Wednesday from 11:30 to 12:30 Eastern Time, and would love to hear from you again. You're doing amazing work, so keep it up, okay?
Okay, you same to you.
Okay, God
Bye.
Bless. Thank you, dear. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. All right, and that is the end of our program. Thank you so much for joining us, and we wish you well. And remember, if there was hope for us, as you heard today, there's hope for anyone. God bless you and stay safe. Yeah, this is true.